packaging that'll help out, because the typical trials use any number of things. In the field, we may use something as simple as you may use something as simple as handing out the medicine, as I mentioned, if you're a practitioner doing this under the table somewhere. Some of the field trials use official letters, letterheads. King County uses a letter on letterhead in a decent looking package with a white bag. But still, you know, we asked, what can we standardize in terms of some materials? And so we started with a simple notion of a little package, a medication package that would have a blister pack on it, try to incorporate everything into one, and would have the instructions for the provider. For the patients and the partners on it in both English and Spanish. So that's what the second part is going to talk about. Is we took the data, the beliefs, and that sort of thing, embedded some of that information inside the informational materials that are being passed out, and performed a study on it. So it seems acceptable, as I mentioned. We think that educational materials, informational materials, and packaging, something standardized, can improve provider, patient, and partner adoption. We don't have these yet because it's a new practice. There's really not a lot of existing standardized materials. So our job, my role in all the research, is to figure out ways to improve both training and ways to improve delivery of this in effect, so that it's more effective and more widespread and available to our population. We think that so some of our goals were to increase the understanding of PDPT, convey the instructions, convey everything that would normally have to be in there, convey the important caveat. I don't know if you caught it real quickly, but in the little Texas Attorney General note down in the middle of one of the paragraphs, he says, and by the way, in addition to this being a normal practice and an extension of things, they encourage people to be clinically evaluated in all of the materials. So it's sort of assumed in many of this that our messaging says, go get checked. So that messaging is in there here. You need to go get checked. You should probably go get checked again and again. So in this study, we examined the development of some materials. We use an iterative design process. What you didn't hear about in the second phase of Kim's report was how we design, and we take it out and we show a couple people and we make sure it's working and they can read it and do that kind of stuff. That's what phase two of her study was about. Phase three of her study was actually our evaluation of materials, which she'll talk about here. I do want to cite a precursor to that by strongly saying that phase one of her study, where she gathered all of this data and everything you heard about in her study, we gathered in phase three, same study that she just reported to you, the only significant difference between those two phases is that when we presented the hypotheticals, they got that piece of packaging. Now that's relevant because any of the data that might have changed in her qualitative results, as well as some survey stuff we asked, can reasonably, though not perfectly, be attributed to the presence of the packaging. So it's kind of interesting. We actually see something that Kim's not going to talk about that I will when I pop up at the very end, that is kind of unusual about what happened with that. But so we sought to address low literacy, English and Spanish. They're all on there. It was inconspicuous. We didn't want it to scream STD on the front cover because you're going to be carrying it around. And we evaluated with subject matter experts in readability and comprehension and modified it a few times. The N equals 5 is her precursor study. You've got it in your hands, so I'm not going to talk about it that much. A little packaging thing. The list of things that are in it, again, you have it, so you can take a look at it. But it's English and Spanish. We introduce it. Frequently asked questions. What should I do with this? I should go get tested. What are you talking about? I have an STD, huh? Kind of stuff. You know, it's what you would convey as a practitioner to anybody who might have this, and the kinds of questions they would have. Those questions came out of our qualitative study. At least a lot of them did. So at this point, I'm going to pass it to Kim and let her talk about how she conducted in this clinic environment. Again, this now was back in the clinic environment, the evaluation. Thanks.
Thank you. So what we wanted to do was evaluate the packaging material, look at acceptability and utility. And participants were 13 demographically diverse men and women, or 13 men, 14 women from an urban STI clinic. So again, roughly half were Latino, Latina. The other half were either white or African American. And participants were given the packaging, and then we asked for them to, again, imagine themselves either delivering or receiving the medication. They had counterbalanced situations. And then they were asked a series of questions to assess their understanding of the instructions related to the materials, as well as the perceptions of the materials. So kind of, you know, do you like this? Do you think it's useful? We used descriptive stats for quantitative data and thematic coding for open-ended responses. So first we asked participants to look at the packaging and explain what it meant. And general themes emerged from these data, and it was basically that they may have been exposed to chlamydia. Again, that was our hypothetical. That chlamydia is curable, and that the medication was provided to treat chlamydia. So they got it. We asked them, what are the three most important things that the packaging is trying to tell you? It's about chlamydia, how to treat chlamydia, how to take the medication. A lot of people have chlamydia and don't know it. The name of the medicine that treats it, and how you can contract the disease. How to take the medications, what medicines you should take, reactions to the medicine, and about sex with your partner. So people really got the point that you shouldn't have sex for a certain period of time while you're being treated, that your partner needs to be treated. So they're kind of, you know, getting the things that are important, I think, to us as public health professionals. Get tested. There's a cure for it. If you have questions, call the clinic. Specific themes centered around description of chlamydia and its symptoms, the side effects of the medication or contraindications, the importance of testing and or treatment, resources for additional information, and general messages, so practicing safe sex or getting tested regularly for an STI. So yes, now that you've read the read the information, what do you think it means? Have safe sex, protected sex, or no sex? It's trying to make people aware of an infection called chlamydia, how long you can have it, some of the symptoms, and the medication that cures it. If you think you have an STD, get tested and let your partner know. Practice safe sex. When we asked about ease of understanding, 89% of participants indicated that the materials were easy to understand, and 90% agreed that the packaging would actually make them better able to approach their partners if they had it, compared to like just a prescription or a pill. So if they were going with the brown paper bag with pills in it, or a prescription provided by one of their healthcare providers, that actually having this package for them made them significantly more able to talk about this and to bring this up with a partner. So 37% strongly agreed, less than 8% disagreed, and nobody strongly disagreed that having this was a good thing. We had some open-ended comments. So participants liked things like how the information was formatted. They liked the information that was provided, the details about chlamydia and the medication that treats the infection. So we asked them, what did you like most about the packaging? The information about symptoms, about of the disease and the medication that cures it. It's very informative about the signs and symptoms. So this was important for them to be able to see actually not only what chlamydia is, but how you can start looking for signs or symptoms of that in yourself. And that it's easy to read. But they wanted this, you know, in a very nice, easy, palpable format. A few people actually asked for additional instructions, so almost like phonetics of how you pronounce the names of the medications. So azithromycin, again, we talked about in my earlier presentation how that was difficult for them to pronounce, or they didn't really know what that was. So they wanted to actually be able to have it written out. How do I actually say this? So if I'm going to approach a partner, I want to be able to talk about it and talk about it well. Individuals encountering PDP PDPT packaging understood the intention and the meaning of the messages. They felt that they would be more able to deliver this medication if the packaging was available. And I will let, actually, Rick take it away and talk about our future work.
Yeah, I do. So I'm actually not going to talk about that first. I want to talk about something else that came out of this study that we don't report here, but will be in the Journal of Sexually Transmitted Infections in the next few months. Remember, I said phase one, phase three. Something interesting that happened between phase one and phase three. We asked in those two phases, if you remember, are you willing to do this? Are you willing to be a receiver or a deliverer of this? When they had when the medication packaging that you have in front of you was present, people who were receivers, I'm presenting you with the hypothetical that you've gotten this from a partner, has brought this to you in your home or wherever you happen to be, and are you willing to take this? It went up a lot, statistically significantly, 30 some odd percent. The willingness went up a lot. Now, oddly enough, the deliverers, it went down statistically significantly. Neither of these is terribly surprising. When you think about it, although it was an odd result when we first saw it, because our little 4x4 was, well, okay, that went, well, that's weird, something's wrong. And I was pushing Kim a few times to make sure we had the numbers in the right slots, because what we think is going on is the receivers now have all the information they need in front of it. It looks professional, it looks correct, they've looked through the whole thing and say, sure, I would take this. Now there are conditions when they wouldn't, and I'll jump to that in just a second, but they'd be willing to. So it enabled them. The deliverers, however, have had it made real for them. Oh, you want me to take this, and this is about that, and you're going to hand it to my mom? Oh, I don't know about that. We don't know that for sure, but that's my interpretation of what's going on here. And so I think we'll have to look at, as we move forward with some of the materials development and enabling, is how does the more information we provide to a deliverer retard their willingness to engage in this particular behavior? And how can we make sure we frame that information in a way that makes it likely they won't disengage from the process simply by knowing too much about what's going on? I don't want to say it that way, but really that's the concern. Whereas the packaging clearly raised the willingness of partners to receive it when it's brought to them. So I think that's an important thing. Now, in terms of that willingness, something that's kind of interesting across both sides of this that was going on with the packaging is that with the packaging present, when people were unwilling to receive it as a partner, they specified that they were unwilling to do so because they felt that it required a doctor's intervention, that what they were being asked to do really required a doctor being involved. That's new. That wasn't in the phase one themes when we were looking at it. That showed up only in the phase two ones and only for these people who said no. That's kind of interesting, because what it means is we may not have hit even strong enough in here that a doctor is not necessarily required for you to do this, yet you really ought to go see a doctor afterwards. And it may be this sort of mixed message in there that we say, you know, we think you ought to go see a doctor to be clinically evaluated, and yet. So we have to look at that. On the flip side, those who said they would be unwilling to deliver it also similarly said, I think a doctor. So I think they may have been scared into it, you know, that a doctor really needs to be involved in this process because now you've handed me too much. So with the packaging involved, that theme shows up, and it wasn't there before. That's kind of interesting for practice. As we have up here, what we want to do from this point forward is look at how we can help providers adopt this. What kind of tool sets can we make to make it easier for you guys in the field to smoothly integrate it into your practice where it's allowed and where it's not allowed, to enable new legislation that will allow it, things like that. We have to figure out ways to help the patients. What kind of tools can we give you to give to the patients beyond this packaging? You know, it's one thing to hand the patient the packaging. This packaging is intended for the partner. It helped the partner. It dissuaded the patients. We really intend to create something that you're going to give to the patient that's going to help the patient with the whole issue of how do I broach this subject with my partner. And so we're going to start with some qualitative research there and then some quantitative research, try to look at what are the issues. You're going to walk in with that whole blame thing I mentioned before. You know, who gave it to me? What happened? How do I do this? And now you've got to hand this to your partner. How can we help them with that step along the way? And then the last part is enabling partners to choose to use it and engaging in that follow-up. What things might we put in place that could either be mediated, like these kinds of brochures or videos, resources they can go to, or that would enable technologically or not for them to conduct follow-up in a more comfortable way than simply showing up at a clinic? Different ideas that we're banging around. So the other thing I want to briefly, since I have a second, talk about, it's not in our slide things here, is we have some other goals that we kind of want to do. One I already mentioned, which is this sort of notion of increasing adoption through regulatory changes in practice. So what do we need to do as a group and as media developers and people who are conducting research in this area to convince legislators and regulators of the reasonableness of this? Risks are really low, benefits really high. What can we provide as a toolkit for all of those red states that help them get it across, and the yellowish states as well? So how can we do that? And how can we foster institutional and organizational uptake? You know, I want to do it in my practice, and yet my administrators don't want to do it because they're afraid of the legal teams. What can we do there? Are there things that we can do to help you out with that sort of adoption? And how can we better support, as I mentioned, the patients and the partners? We also want to look at extending the application of this to other STI beyond chlamydia, which is what we're focused on here, and to broadening this whole concept of outsourcing STI services. Most of EPT is focused right now on this particular thing, PDPT, particularly for chlamydia and to some extent for gonorrhea, but we want to see, can we broaden the services part, expedited partner services? How can we enable a patient to deliver therapy, which is what we're talking about, but to deliver partner screening? There is some of that going on, early research, some of you may or may not be aware of how can I take as a partner a screening kit home to my partner and facilitate that portion? And also, how can we engage the patient, in counseling the partner? It's the whole notion of, you know, it's a step beyond where I'm talking about how do I enable somebody to simply say, I got a disease and you do too, and here's the meds. Well, how do we enable that partner to be better educated to, I've got a disease, you do too, how do we prevent this in the future step? So that's that last part. So I appreciate everybody's time this morning, and we will open it up to, yeah, especially since for those of us on the East Coast, it's lunch, and for those of us not, it was really early to be in here. Now we'll open it up to any questions that you may have, and thank you. Awesome. In the back.
One of the cofactors you mentioned was the strength of the relationship of the partner in terms of, I think it was the deliverer.
In delivery, there was a single question, so I'm not that was simply how, and I don't remember the endpoints on it. It was a scaled question, 1 to 5. How strong it was validated from one of Dennis's studies. But
apropos of that, I was wondering if you considered, or maybe you did, the relationship in the question to the receiver. For example, did you ask the question as a hypothetical, if a hypothetical partner delivered this packet versus
if I had a partner, where would how we actually? Sure, we didn't frame. That's a good. That would be another interesting way to do it. Yeah. How it was asked in this particular study was considering your closest relationship, closest current relationship, if you were in a relationship, which we'd asked. Yeah, we asked whether or not they were in a relationship, so those are excluded. And then your closest current relationship. So we were looking at primary partner. And yeah, it would be nice if we'd broken that out, but our instrument was getting really long anyway, so we didn't break it out. But it's actually in reference to the closest. So all we really know is for delivery, the closest primary partner is positively correlated. So the relationship with them, if they feel it's a really strong relationship, they're going to be more likely to do it. It would be nice to look at in the future casual or hypothetical partners if I know, you know, who is your partner, and then let's talk about her type of thing.
If it's a hypothetical or casual. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And came back to you and said, hey, you better take this.
Absolutely.
You're what you're receiving in it.
Sure.
You know, how old you are. Mm-hmm. Versus maybe my regular, steady girlfriend for 5 years now says, I am better paid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Completely different response.
Yeah, it would be really nice to be able to focus in on that whole, what as Kim refers to it, the relationship context, a little more strongly in future studies if we have the space in our instruments, because it is an important variable in that.
You might be able to tutor your material, also depending upon whether it's a casual partner or a personal partner.
Did you have?
Certainly. I mean, if you think of patient-deliver partner therapy is essentially just a basic, a version of patient referral, right? On it, this has come up with any enhancement and with any, even any basic construction. The closer and the more long-term the relationship, the more likely it is to happen. In the state of Washington, on it, one of the, at least in King County, on the algorithm for whether they're going to offer patient-deliver partner therapy to partners, one of the questions is a little quick set of questions. Are you going to have sex with this person again? If the answer to that question is no, you ain't a good candidate. Are you going to? If the answer to that question is no, are you planning to have sex with that partner again? You're not a good candidate for patient-deliver partner therapy, because it is unlikely that you are going to seek. You're not a good candidate because you are much less likely to seek that person out and deliver the meds. With as a flat algorithm, you go into the receives other help pile, because people who are not planning on seeing the person again, not planning on having sex with the person again, are empirically much less likely to notify that person. Right? And if you're not likely to notify that person, seek them out to notify them, no point in my putting medications or a prescription in your hand to do so. In all of the patient referral studies, it is the main long-term married girlfriend, boyfriend, what have you, spouse on it, those people are much more likely to be notified. They're not always happy about it. The other piece in this, right, the index person to us is not necessarily the index as far as the entry of chlamydia or what have you into that relationship, and Rick and Kim alluded to this with the blame. So, I mean, you will get people who will come and say, I'm going to give me the phone. I'm going to call that jerk right now. Right? So some of that, you can get a little bit of the notion of what will people do when they think, when they've been playing away as the worst, when they think somebody else has. You can see some of that in the clinic already. But it's a good it's a good question to ask on it, because it gets into context and it makes a huge difference to anything where you're asking the patient to perform the task.
From the lovely state of Utah, and we are in the middle right now of trying to get enabling legislation for this cap. And overwhelmingly, the three things we hear from legislators are the contradictory message that this sends about antibiotics, that we've spent thousands, millions, billions of dollars saying, don't take an antibiotic if you don't need it and you don't have a diagnosis. And that's a very confusing message for people. The other one is that they just don't think it's actually going to happen. And the other confusion, at the moment, we're looking at prescriptive authority. So the confusion about what you put on the name of the prescription and how that's done, and how, for some of our legislators, if Susie is the 17-year-old in a group who thinks she has chlamydia, so she's going to go get a prescription.
And most of the treatments are one dose shots. One of the issues with most antibiotics is this issue of non-completion. Whether the study I hand waved at was an AJPH, we were looking at whether or not people were finishing their entire thing, whether or not they were borrowing people's prescription antibiotics. And those are sort of the more serious issues where I complete half a course, I keep it on the shelf, and somebody else completes half a course and that kind of thing. So you could probably frame it in part by they're going to take it all if they have it, or they're not going to take it at all if they have it. That type of thing might help as well.
Right. You need a clear message from the to the legislature, from the public health authorities, right? Preventive treatment is conceptually but also empirically related to disease control. So you are going to treat people. If you had the Hogwarts method and you could wave a wand and bring them into the clinic, you would treat them on the basis of exposure. End of story. So that's what a legislator, I think, needs to hear on it. They already have stuff on the books that permits this. This is in their public health practice. So what this is just simply a mechanism to increase those treatment levels on it. One of several, right? Any kind of enhancement. Probably focusing on that sort of line. As for medication hoarding, when Susie da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? That's not entirely preventable. It's not entirely preventable if you just give Susie her prescription and she fills it and she chivvies that pill in half and she takes half now and she saves half for the next time there's bad news, or does her own prophylaxis, or she gives one to the girl. You don't prevent any of this by restricting the outflow of medication on it. That's pretty much where I would stand with it.
Mm-hmm. Messaging is that, you know, we're here to provide care and to prevent disease and to treat disease, and it gets really convoluted in the values.
Of course, yeah.
What's happening? That gets complicated as well. Thank you.
Sure.
This was the study I referred to was an evaluation in San Francisco around about 2000-2002. They had some means of measuring at any point, and they reckon they were only getting about 3/5 of partners treated through their current method. They obviously had enough disease intervention specialists, DIS, to be able to carry medications out for people coming in through the public clinics on it. So they would give a gonorrhea interview. Gonorrhea interviewing, basically, I mean, a good sort of, you ask basically who's your last partner. That's the last person who's likely to have infected you on it. So they're typically quite easy, relatively easy to find. You don't have these huge networks on it. And the DIS went out to conduct the notification, takes a dose with them, and their treatment rates based on being at the DIS being able to observe, right, to verify the treatment, rose from 60% to about 61% to about 85%, plus or minus 2 or 3 percentage points based on the state of my memory. But you were looking at a significant reduction in untreated cases on that method. Okay, that's another reasonable means of expediting the treatment. The only sort of caution I add into this is that, yes, if you can afford to send the people out to do it. If you can afford to send your professional staff out to do this, by all means. If you can't, don't sit on your hands and wait until that, you know, that happy day arises when you can. That would be my suggestion for it. But, sure. It's a significant burden to uptake on it. Sometimes, I mean, there's a variety of ways that people have approached this on it. Sometimes in a private setting, the patient has insurance, or the clinic is able to cover the costs. They provide the may provide the meds directly, or they simply they can hand out a prescription, and then they leave it at that. And somebody out there is going to incur the cost on it, the patient, the patient's partner, pool their resources, what have you, on it. But I'm not trivializing it, because sometimes it's those costs and where those costs are felt and you have this big societal benefit, but all the cost is incurred at the patient level or at the clinic level, and it can be an impediment to uptake. There are certainly people who decline this or never fill the prescriptions on the grounds that they can't, that $20 is just simply unaffordable to them at that time.